You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome to the Good, the Bad, and the Rugby. I'm Alex Payne. It's lovely to be back with you once again this week. This is Husk. This is Tins. How's week one been?
It's been good, actually. Can't complain. He's pretty good, the wee man. He loves his Umbro Lord's Work stash that I've already got him in. He's been great so far.
Good. You've revealed the big trail, but we'll come back to that in a bit more detail in a moment. Hoff, don't Haskell the Hoff. What's happening?
Do you know what? Something fun happened, and I can't absolutely remember what it was now. So I'm just going to say business as usual. That's it, really. Something happened, and I can't remember what it happened. I've got a skip. That's been a big day.
You got a skip?
I've got a skip, yeah.
You having a clear out, eh?
What for?
I just thought I needed a skip. I thought I'd reached that age where you need a skip. You're like qualified to have a skip.
Are you digging something? Or
why have you got a skip?
Went up in the loft and discovered a load of stuff, and like, it's a bit of old stuff I need to start clearing out.
How much stuff have you got?
How big's your loft?
Wait, what, you didn't think I'd done all these media appearances and all these deals? I live in a shed? I know I live in a thing.
A few skeletons up there as well.
Oi. Love it. Who is it? Michael McIntyre. He says that, you know, only men go up the lofts. Imagine you went up there and it's just got loft whores on a champagne bar. That's what Chloe doesn't know. I should work you in the loft 5 times a day.
Good. Super start to this week's show. That's right up there with some of the finest content we've produced. Right. Big announcement. I'm very excited about this. Tits and teeth, fellas. Chests out, please. We've got a new friend in the GBNR stable. Eagle-eyed amongst you will have noticed last week just a gentle dropping in of some product placement. We have got a new brand association. We are very excited to be going merch pro with the England kit manufacturer, Umbro. I'm going to say this. I'm not sure whether this is natural in terms of the way that I would speak, but we've got an exclusive range of garms on the boil.
That's how new Paino speaks. That's how new GBR Paino speaks.
Just a little something for those who love their stash. It's a little starter for 10. If you love it, we've got some stuff for you. If it's not your thing, don't worry too much about it. Move on. Let's start with you. What have you got? You've already revealed yours, Tins, but you have got...
I have got the Lord's Work.
Which I like. Are you happy with that? Fits nicely?
Yeah, I'm all good with that.
Hoff?
I've got Don't Haskell the Hoff.
See what you've done there? Yeah. It suits you well. You fill it nicely.
Well, I wanted to put on the front of the T-shirts. I wasn't allowed to. Everything else in life.
We're trying to be a family show. Ellis is the Loose Rhino. Ben Kayser is the Betonetteur. And for some reason, I've ended up with no Paino, no Gaino. We are very excited, though. I think there's some proper top-quality stash, and I hope people might want to have a little nibble. What do you think?
I've just remembered also what happened to me.
Right, okay.
Which would have been great if I'd had the stash, because you're probably going to see about it in the papers either later today or tomorrow.
Right.
So today you're allowed to go in two households, allowed to mix in an outside space. So we went down to see Chloe's parents. And anyway, we took Bertie down with us. We're in the garden, you know, socially distanced, all that, in a boiler suit and a biohazard suit, whatever you're supposed to be wearing. And Bertie decided to run out the door and run across the road onto the heath. So I walked out the door, I can't run, walked out the door, walked across the road, shouted to him, and out of nowhere, a photographer turns up, right? I whistle for Bertie, starts taking photos. Bertie takes one look at me and goes to the other side of this giant heath, right? I am obviously trying not to look like that guy from...
Benton!
Yeah. Right,
Benton! So like,
but obviously Bertie's such a posh middle-class name. I'm like, Bertie! Right, I whistle, and he goes to the bushes, right? His pap's going, all right, James, you might tell yourself. I was like, listen, mate, this is a bit, I'm under pressure. Anyway, he comes out of the bush, looks at me, and I go, come here. And he runs off into another field. I know, after running, I've been running 2 years, trying to keep it together, right? Running. And Chloe's taken the collar off him because she doesn't want him to be uncomfortable. I was like, it's a dog. He doesn't get uncomfortable, it's a dog. Anyway, runs to another field. He's in some sort of gang thing with these other dogs. I tried to grab him. He runs off after me. The paparazzi is taking photos of me the whole time. I decided to pick Bertie up because I can't grab him. I've got him over my head. He's licking my head, covering me my stuff in mud. I've walked, as I've got there, he's wriggled out. So I've half dropped him. The bloke's photographed me again. Right. I've managed to get a stick in my hand. I've got a stick. I'm mesmerised with a stick. He sat there for the stick. So it looks like I've staged it. I then had to pick up Bertie like a handbag and just walk across him off the road and throw him into the garden. I'm covered in mud, saliva. That's my day. And that guy's going to sell it to the Daily Mail online. So that's going to be in the papers by the time his podcast got out. But only if I'm wearing Don't Ask the Hoff, he may have backed off. Right. But anyway, so that's what happened, and it's going to be carnage.
I'm not entirely sure that's what Umbro wanted in terms of a press release of the association between the good, the bad, and the rugby and England's kit manufacturer. But that's what they've got. And if they didn't know that's what they were signing up for, they do now. We are genuinely very excited. I think there's a lot of fun that we're going to have. I think that's the main thing about this, is that there are going to be fun bits and bobs. We're going to have duvet covers, key rings, pens,
baby grows.
Action Man dolls. What? Baby grows. Actually, they've already been in touch with you, little baby grow for Mini Lord. That's for any of the super fans who want to get involved. But we do have some really good fun plans in the pipeline. We're talking about a Twickenham pitch day, which I think should be quite good fun. Maybe a little sevens tournament or something, some challenges. Apparently, we're going to be doing a fitness session with Bristol Bears. There are going to be football challenges at West Ham. I quite like the idea of the two of you having a penalty shootout at half-time at the Olympic Stadium.
Yes, I'd love that.
That would be really cool. Against the West Ham reserve keeper. What do you think?
I mean, I could try, but it's going to be so embarrassing.
But that's the one where you score because the keeper's laughing at you as you try to run in, and you'll end up scoring, and I'll smash it over the bar. I'll waddle it.
I think that could be quite good fun. And then we're going to go and visit the AE Williams F1 team as well at some point. They are modern, elite, athletic branding.
Yeah, but you're not. That's none of those things. You're old English, posh, interbred, and various other things. We need to represent that.
Good. It's been lovely having Umbro as a sponsor. I'm not sure they'll be here for week two, but thanks so much for all your support on this one-off show.
Short-lived.
Yeah, short-lived. No, there is going to be a lot of fun. We've got competitions, invitations, collaborations, all sorts of things coming down the track. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope you'll all get involved. In fact, to kick us off, I'm told we are launching a competition to win a range of the awesome T-shirts. Please head to the Good, the Bad and the Rugby Instagram page to find out how to enter at Good, Bad and Rugby. The merch has landed. Get involved. Lots more plans, fun and games to be had along the way. More details in due course. Any more for any more? Should we get into the meat of it?
I'm just going to jump off with one thing, because we can. I was in touch by London Pride Sevens 2021. Yeah. So there is we are all about promoting all rugby, and there is a London Pride Sevens on the 5th of June this year. I just wanted to give a big Good, the Bad, the Rugby shout out to them, and hope it all goes well, because we want to see as much inclusion in our sport as we possibly can.
I just want to emphasise that's more the pride element rather than London Pride the beer.
Yes, sorry, that is.
We are inclusive about drinking as well.
Yes. We include all types of ale, all types of people, anyone who loves rugby. Yeah.
Get involved.
Everyone's welcome. Good. Enough frivolity to the rugby. And on Friday night, Scotland beat France, which meant that Wales won the 2021 Six Nations. Congratulations, chapeau to them. The man who masterminded a quite remarkable turnaround in the fortunes of Welsh rugby over the last year or so is a certain Wayne Pivac, and he has unbelievably agreed to join us this evening. Wayne Pivac, thank you for coming along. It is very nice to see you. How are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
You're a little bit tired, actually. A couple of late nights, but certainly worth it in the end. Just very pleased that we're able to get across the line in a strange old way, but for the players, put in so much hard work.
Thank you for joining us, and thank you for bringing out arguably the most famous curtains in Wales. Would that be a fair assessment of the last 48 hours?
I think they are. I've had a lot of comments from around the globe, actually. You'd be surprised who comes out of the woodwork.
Good. What has been the most extraordinary sort of home decor feedback that you've had?
There's some T-shirts going around and been printed already in New Zealand to do with Wayne Pivac's curtains, but I'm not sure. I think one of the sons might be involved there.
I want to know, what was the rigging setup on the on the board behind you, the checkerboard behind you? Were you just sat on it and holding it up yourself? Was it down the back of the chair?
It was supposed to be 2 metres wide, you see, which would have blocked out the curtains perfectly. But it was made the same day, I think, that they dropped it off, and it was only a metre wide. the thing was tipping forward all the time, so I had to just prop it up against the chair, and so every time I moved, the thing was moving around.
I mean, everybody loves an iconic moment, you know, and you win a trophy, and you dream of the pot lift. I just wonder, again, sort of 1 to 10, how you will look back on the moment that you were crowned 2021 Six Nations champions. There was a lot going on at that moment.
You know, you're sitting in your own lounge for a start without your teammates, your management or players, and you know, you're watching another game of rugby on TV. It was surreal, you know. It's, I've never had that experience before, obviously. That's what you have a Super Saturday for, isn't it? To sort out a winner. But so from that point of view, you know, last week out in Paris, it was quite good because, you know, we had the disappointment of not winning a Grand Slam, and then to turn around and try to celebrate a championship would have been an interesting exercise in itself. But certainly having a week to sort of wait and see what was going to be the outcome, and then the way the game was played out on Friday night, you know, it had us going right down to the wire pretty much. So, yeah, it was a long old wait, really.
What were the emotions like on the Friday? I'm just trying to make, because you're completely out of your comfort zone. You can't do anything about it.
Yeah, well, obviously our phones, text messaging was going around the group. You know, the Six Nations group that we have, there's about 60-odd people on there. And, you know, I was going flat out, and you sort of ride every knock on, and we were cheering the Scottish, you know. And I found myself just cheering at the TV whenever a play went Scotland's way, you know. And, you know, certainly when they scored, you'd work out, okay, it's now 24 points differential, and, you know, they'd chalked off one try. And I think there was a massive moment where, you know, I just about had heart failure, and that was the yellow card just on half time. And then there was the line out 5 metres out. The French had a score then, I think, it would have been a long second half.
Have you sent Gregor Townsend a bottle of wine yet?
I sent him a message before the game, I can assure you of that. And there will be something going his way.
Because, you know, there was a great couple of memes going around, sort of Alwyn Jones in a false moustache and a kilt. Did you put any of the players up, change their names?
Oh, there was some great texts, some great messaging that went out. You had to laugh, you know. There's some people with a great sense of humour out there.
Have you managed to celebrate properly? I know it's been a roller coaster and there's been a hell of a lot going on, but in this curious world in which we all live, have you managed to raise a glass two or three?
Yeah, but not as you would normally. So we didn't have the change room scenes that the guys live for, and those memories that you take with you, you know. So it was done individually in homes, and texting and ringing each other up on the Friday night after the game, and messages of congratulations to the boys, which is a bit different. And then we got together and obviously had the actual medal ceremony in our training venue at the Vale here in Wales. And then we had a management get together after that. Players all have to go off. Some were playing club rugby. Obviously the exiled boys couldn't come to the medal ceremony. So that was all a little bit different, but we haven't got together as a team, which is strange. So I think everyone's done their own thing, but certainly not together as a management and playing group together.
You haven't had Alan Wynne-Jones doing the splits?
No, I have seen the splits, but no, not since for some time.
What were the emotions like at the Vale? I mean, obviously there has to be satisfaction and great delight, but is there a lingering itch, I suppose, in some ways, or is it just job done?
Look, I guess where we had been in terms of the first Six Nations that I was involved with, and then we had, obviously, that was interrupted, you know, with COVID and the lockdown. So that was a strange old set of circumstances in itself. And we didn't come out of lockdown very well as a group. We certainly didn't have the hard rugby in Wales in the club sense that you had for some of the English clubs and Irish clubs and French who are in the latter stages of Europe, and going from that to Test match rugby is obviously a lot better than what we had, which was some derby matches where the coaches were rotating players, and, you know, some of our guys came in with sort of 60, 80 minutes under their belt. And if you look at the English boys with the Saracens boys coming out with no rugby, you know, I feel for those guys. I can see what's going on there, because we went through it in the autumn. You know, if you're not match fit, match hardened, it makes it difficult, you know. So we had that period through the autumns, but to come out the other side of that and then to perform the way we did, it was very satisfying. The players obviously worked really, really hard, and they've bought into everything we've done. So just pleasing for the whole group to come out with a result. So it was still a little bit annoying that we didn't get that Grand Slam, because we desperately wanted that. And as as you boys know, they don't come along every day of the week. So that was a bit frustrating.
What has the emotional roller coaster been like for you personally? Obviously, that we've talked about this enough on our show about how one week you can be brilliant, the next week everyone, and Haskell say everyone needs to be fired, we need to get rid of everyone. And, you know, you've gone from what people have said, under pressure in your position, to then turning it fully around to completely the other side, you're the best thing since sliced bread. And how has that been personally as an emotional roller coaster, and how have you dealt with that?
I certainly expected the roller coaster. I mean, the history of Welsh coaches suggests that. And throughout the interview process, it was one of the main topics. The last interview was around, you know, if you're successful, how are you going to handle the Welsh public and how are you going to handle that roller coaster? Because it's a very much a goldfish bowl, and rugby is the number one sport in Wales, and it's a small country, so you can't really hide. For me personally, it was making sure that once I got the role, that the board signed off the plan that we put through to the World Cup, how we were going to navigate our way through. And we were updating the board all the time. And when the decision was made by World Rugby in terms of the world rankings, or the rankings, how they'd set up, the top four sides for the 2023 World Cup, once we knew that we were ranked fourth, we felt that we had a free shot in the autumns. So we looked, obviously we've got a ranking system like everybody does, and we've got a few holes, and so it was making sure that we used that wisely. And for us, it was about giving guys an opportunity for us to learn about them and for them to see if they could play at this level and go away and take away their work-ons. So we felt that, you know, we were running a risk, and obviously results, it may cause a few results that we wouldn't have ordinarily wanted, but we sacrificed that to make sure that we built depth. And you could see in the Six Nations with the selection we went with, and we're a lot more consistent in our selections, which helped things like your line out and your set plays. And so really we were the author of our own misfortune in the autumns, but it was signed off by the board and it's what we wanted to do. And so we were never in jeopardy as far as our coaching positions were with our board. And so that was the first thing. So when you know that, you can go on and do these things. You understand it's the public, you're going to always want results in Wales. So you just got to live with that and grin and bear it. But, you know, I got a background of coming from the police in New Zealand, and, you know, I've dealt with a lot worse things and a bit of abuse.
I was going to say this. Was it the darkest period or was it didn't even touch the sides? Because from the outside, having spoken to you know, Eddie and seeing what's his hat, where you know, where you were, he is now. Was it the hardest thing you've been through?
No, not for me. Not in long shot. You know, it's how you construct your contracts and how you communicate with people, and having a chairman and a CEO that you can talk to on a regular basis, and you know, you're on the same page. You've got to remember those people are part of signing off the plans, because, you know, everything we do costs money and we've got to get approval on a lot of things. So first thing you've got to do is make sure that those boys are across everything we're doing and they sign off on it. So that gives you a little bit of assurance, you know, but things can change. But as I say, we involve those guys in most things we're doing. So they feel part of it.
There wasn't a point where you thought, I'm going to chuck this in. I don't need this drama.
No, because you just look at your bank balance each month, you know. And
at least you're honest.
Yeah. Has could definitely associate with that.
It's good to be a fellow Kiwi. Because if you listen to any Kiwis, it's all about the love of the game. We're all very humble, but you've come in straight, and I like that. You're on team, on board.
No use beating around the bushes here. No, look, it's you wake up every morning, and as a professional player, you guys will be exactly the same. You know, you feel privileged to do what you do, and to get paid to do your sport, it's something special. Coaches are no different. You know, we're just old players, and look, to be still involved in the game now at my age and getting paid a good salary, you take the highs and the lows, and you just got to enjoy the highs while they're there, you know.
I really want to come on to your career in the police force in a moment. I'm just fascinated by what you said about part of the interview process. It sounds almost like they tested the thickness of your hide, as it were. I mean, when you're talking about how you're going to handle it if it goes wrong, is that as much a two-way conversation as them asking you how you're going to kind of cope in those circumstances?
Yeah, well, clearly, I think in the past, some coaches have struggled dealing with it, and probably Welsh coaches more so than overseas coaches. You know, coming from New Zealand, rugby's the number one sport there as well. And, you know, where I came from, Auckland, whether or not you have the strongest side at the time, because it's Auckland, you're expected to win all the time. So there's always pressure every time your team took the field to win. So you understand what that's like. So it's no different here now with Wales. So I'm used to that side of it. But when you have to go into people's homes and tell them that someone's passed away, you know, dealing with somebody over a rugby result is probably a lot easier than, and some of the things you get involved with in the interviewing of some pretty bad people out there, you know, it makes it a lot easier. Well, for me personally, I know talking to Steve Hansen and Mike Cron, the other boys that I was in the police with, you know, you're used to dealing with people from all sorts of different backgrounds, you know, from your, the likes of the guys you're going to have on your boards, you know, the company directors and guys have done very, very well. And then you've got to deal with fellas that probably didn't do that well at school, you know, and have been in trouble a bit. And getting them to get on the same page as you and so you can get the job done is, it makes, I think, the level of communication and that sort of thing a lot easier. And I find that's probably a strength.
I was just going to quickly ask, because I'm fascinated in the framework that you personally therefore operate in. And if naught is sack him, he's got to go now, and 100 is he's the greatest thing, let's make him the King of Wales. Where, Wayne, do you keep your sort of, your frame? Do you just sit at 50% all the time, or do you get down to sort of 40% and up to 60%? Where do you operate on that emotional scale when things are going not as well as you want and going where you need them to be?
I have a lot of conversations with a lot of people on a regular basis in and around our group. So that, you know, hopefully, you know, you're on top of most things, relationships that you build over time. And I guess having the 5 years, I think it was, at the Scarlets and having a decent representation from Scarlets in the Welsh team. Now, boys all talk, don't they? And they all ask questions. They all want to know what people are like. And so I think having those relationships with the Ken Owens, the Jonathan Davies, those sorts of people who are the senior players in the Welsh side, it certainly helped. But look, yeah, there's some things that you have to do. You know, I had a pretty tough conversation with Byron Hayward, who was my defence coach for 5 years. We won a championship together, did well in Europe. But, you know, for what we needed right now, it just wasn't working in terms of what we're delivering in terms of our defence. So, you know, that was a pretty tough conversation. But because of the relationship, we're able to say, we've got to do what's best for the team. It's as simple as that. And credit to Byron, you know, he handled that really, really well. It's getting guys like Alan Wynne-Jones, you know, making sure that he's across most things that we're doing. So I think, you know, when you see a guy like Alan Wynne and you see what he's doing on the field, and then when you see him in the training area, he's still, you know, the guy that gets first at the scrums, the first of the line out. He's so driven. I mean, you get a guy like that on side and he's got a new lease of life. It's sort of, the communication is huge. It's man managers is 90% of what I do. So yeah, you can go from sort of one speed to the next quite quickly, from having a tough conversation with a fellow coach to picking a 19-year-old.
You've obviously got a great communication with the CEO and the board above you. When you take on a job like Welsh Rugby that, and everyone throws out legacy of Gatland and what's gone before you, when you're taking over from that legacy of someone who's been there for 8-10 years, did you always know it was going to be tough, because you are having to completely shift mindsets from how you, your philosophies separate from Gatland, say? Did you know that was going to be tough, and was that part of the process of you going through it with the board about where you're going and how you're going to get there?
Yeah, and I had to make sure they all understood that Warren had done a fantastic job. Obviously, he won a lot of Grand Slams, championships, but I felt that what hadn't been done by that regime was do well on a consistent basis against Southern Hemisphere sides. And to win a World Cup, you've got to be able to, at some stage in the tournament, knock over a pretty good Southern Hemisphere side or two, as well as, you know, deal with our Northern Hemisphere neighbours. So, you know, it was, how do we do that? And I think it's probably proven that you've got to score some points in the modern game, as well as defend really, really well. So what we wanted to do was just add to what was already a very good team. But as it was with the Scarlets, it took 2 or 3 seasons before we really nailed our attack. It takes a while if you've played a certain way for a long period of time, and you've got to improve skill sets. So yeah, it was getting the messaging across and making sure everybody understood what we're trying to do and achieve and buy into it. So for me, it's about, yeah, Warren had left a great legacy, but it was being focused on how can we add to what he's done to try and win a World Cup. And it's as simple as that, really. So for us, it was, we've got to score more tries. We've got to be more creative in terms of what we do with the ball. And that's what we've done behind the scenes. And I think we started to see that in the latter part of the competition.
I can already see the Western Mail writing the headline, "We're going to win the World Cup." So I hope you're all right with the pressure that's going to come. Sorry, Hask.
No, I was going to say, obviously, when you're top of the tree and you're prioritising kind of the mental state of the team, getting the message across and putting the kind of your standard down and winning people over, it can be quite lonely as well up there. Do you have people that you turn to and communicate, anyone that you really bounce ideas off? Because, you know, when you're dictating everything, sometimes it's nice to turn to someone without a bit of judgment and go, Jesus, this isn't, you know, whatever, this is going well, this isn't going well, what do I do? Do you have anyone like that?
Yeah, well, we're very lucky, I'm very lucky in that you'll notice that the team I've put around me in terms of team manager, Nugget, you know, Martin Williams, 100 tests. You know, you've got Gethin Jenkins, Mellon there with 129 tests, whatever it is, Stephen Jones, 104, British Lions. So they have a lot of interesting information when it comes to, you know, the psyche of some of these boys and what they're going through. Because you got to remember, I haven't played test match rugby, you know. So for me, those guys have been invaluable. And one which I've got to mention is Neil Jenkins, who's obviously been part of both regimes now. You know, and we looked at Alan Wynn coming back, no club rugby. Ken Owens, maybe one game, half a game or something. Josh Navidi, no rugby. Liam Williams, very little rugby. Jonathan Davies, very little rugby. But, you know, the experiences Jinx has had with those guys over a number of years is that quality world-class players sometimes can get back with a few training runs and so long as they're hitting certain numbers. And they know their bodies better than anyone. So, again, that was reassuring. And then it's just I have a lot of individual conversations with players, you know, and I think they've enjoyed the fact that there's a lot of communication. And that's probably, if anything, maybe I communicate too much sometimes. It's something that I've got to keep in check.
You mentioned about you having not played test rugby. Does it feel a bit like for you when, you know, they pick presidents who haven't served in like the armed forces and people look down their nose at it? Do you think it's something you have to worry about? You find you're judged a bit more on that, or does it not matter? I'm interested because I'd never thought of it like that, because you're either a good coach or you're not. But for some of these old heads, people get a bit funny about that kind of thing.
Yeah, look, I think you've got to prove yourself. I think, you know, when you come into any new environment, there are always going to be one or two that are going to test you out. But I did a lot of work prior to coming into the first camp meetings, you know, Alan Wynn having coffees and sitting down and explaining the way we wanted to play the game and trying to get them excited about and getting a new lease of life. And I think the work, the mileage that went in early on with individuals, and then when they come together as a group and start chatting. And I think also having a guy like Stephen Jones, who's well-respected, obviously, in all parts of the world, but certainly in Wales is a bit of a hero, and the Martin Williams, these sorts of blokes, when they're talking around what we'd achieved at the Scarlets and how we went about it, and also what you've done in other competitions. So I think it's important, again, just to make sure that you get the key people on side early.
Can I ask you just, I suppose, a couple of questions just about the campaign as a whole? And, I mean, everyone knows the Six Nations is so important to get momentum building. Did you come into this tournament in 2021 thinking we are quietly under the radar, but we're exactly where we want to be? Or was it just a case of, let's win the first game and see? Did you have expectations of silverware, or were you just fascinated to see how it would come together?
Yeah, well, I think every team at test level that's, apart from Italy in this competition, probably believed that they could win the competition. Look, we knew the work we'd done behind the scenes. We knew that we'd selected a different team from the one in the autumn series. And everyone was banging on about the autumn series and writing us off. We were sitting there quite comfortable in the fact that we knew we were a different team. We had another, you know, few weeks together in terms of the squad that we'd picked. We'd obviously been getting around club rugby behind the scenes and talking to people, and you know, everyone had got their work-ons going away from the last campaign and knew exactly the skill sets they had to be working on. Once we got into camp, we had a couple of really good weeks before the Irish game. So we went in there quietly confident, certainly not overconfident, but we knew how important those first two games were, and we had a six-day turnaround and travelling away for the Scotland game. And that, for us, was going to be the big challenge. We felt if we could get those two games out of the way, you know, an England-Wales game pretty much takes care of itself. Certainly, that's my experience being with the Welsh boys. You know, they'll always get up for that game. And so we had a week off too to prepare for that one. So that was always going to be the big one. If we could get through that, then it was just going to come down to France. So we had some luck, obviously, at the start of the competition. But we felt in both games we were in a reasonable space when those red cards came. And as you've seen in this competition, you lose a red card doesn't mean to say you lose a guy to a red card doesn't mean to say you lose a match necessarily.
Did you really notice a difference with the England week? I'm always interested because, you know, we've talked about it before, and I think, you know, Warren Gatland talked about it, Sean Edwards talked about it before, that, you know, if Wales were to beat England, obviously you guys were in a much better position than we were. All is kind of forgiven. Did you actually notice, like, a tangible thing of, like, boy, suddenly just a couple of inches taller, training slightly more aggressive? Did you notice that, or is it all a bit of just rhetoric?
No. It takes another level. It goes up another notch. Believe you me.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just so much history, isn't there? And the boys talk about it openly, and people on the street will turn around and say to you, we don't really care what happens so long as you beat England, you know, all's forgiven. You know, it's like that. And when you get down to the tribalism and club rugby in Wales, when I was coaching the Scarlets, it didn't matter what you did all season, so long as you beat the Ospreys, you know. And so they're very, very much like that when it comes to England, Wales. So, yeah, and you see Alan Wynne, you know, like he's a great barometer. Like, he winds guys up in the early part of the week, and he's very experienced at doing it, you know. And that particular week, as each day went on, it just got ramped up more and more. And we had to say very little in the latter part of the week because we could see that the guys were in pretty good space, you know.
Are you more disappointed about not getting to celebrate as a team or not having a full stadium to see you guys beat the... to beat us? Because I imagine it'd be 50-50. And I know you haven't experienced both yet, but I can tell you, having been there and lost to Wales, mate, people talk about the crowd and the noise, and you don't appreciate it. There, against Wales, Wales are 5 points up, you're 5 metres from the Welsh line. It's like someone's pushing on your head. I've never experienced anything like it to date.
Yeah, look, it's a pretty special place. And I've only had three experiences with the crowd there, the Barbars, I think Italy and France. But we were sort of talking about it and saying, and the boys that have been there and done it before were saying the crowd would have absolutely gone off with Corey Hill's try at the end. We'd won the game at that stage. You know, it's the last play of the game. But the fact that they got a try, got a bonus point, got 40 points, that the place would have gone crazy. And, of course, you know what would have happened in the streets later on. So missing out on the crowds has been disappointing. But you guys know, when you win a championship, the change room is the place that everyone wants to be. And the scenes that go on there, it's what you do all the hard work for. And at that point, you're not worrying about bonuses and money. It's just to win a championship.
Did you discover you had friends that you didn't know you had when you won the Six Nations? Because I bet you went, a lot of friends went missing when it was bad times. But did you gain a few? You were like, Christ, I don't think I've heard from you for a while. Or who are you?
Yeah, 100% right there. Yeah, there was... Yeah, I don't know how some people get your number, you know. It's supposed to be a private number, but yeah, they do manage to get it from all over the place.
They still have it in the local book. They have a directory in Wales. You can't get out of it. It's just such a key role. I was going to say, you talked about your attack, and that was really interesting to me, because would you still say there's still work-ons for the attack outside of the 22, but inside the opposition 22, you must have walked away unbelievably happy with how many times you went in there and came away with points. It was astounding for me.
Yeah, it was one of the things that came out of the autumns was we had a lot more focus sort of 5 to 10 metres out from the goal line. We did a bit more work on it, and we've played around with what we do with the ball carrier and who supports them and before contact, that sort of thing. And we scored a few tries in that area, which we hadn't done previously. So that was pleasing. But you're right. We had a disconnect. We were, in previous campaigns, we were attacking quite well from, you know, counter-attacking around our own 10-metre line, turnover ball, that sort of thing. But once we got into the 22, the play slowed down. We didn't really have a go-to. So we spent a lot more time in training in and around the opposition 22 with a view of we come away with some points. So we build pressure so we can get 3 points. By multiple phases and obviously being very accurate at what we do at the breakdown. Speed of ball at the breakdown is everything for us with what we're trying to do with the attack. So we place a lot of emphasis on that.
The question I'd love to ask you as well, I don't know whether you've sort of done anything on this, but we were talking actually last week, and I know it's not as simple as 3 million people in Wales and 55 million people in England, but Wales, particularly in the last 15, 20 years, have been unbelievably good at maximising the sum of their parts. I think even Brian O'Driscoll was saying this week that everyone is envious of how Wales have achieved what they've achieved with what they've got. I mean, if you could bottle that, you could sell it alongside the T-shirts of Wayne's Curtains and you'd be making a lot of money. But I just wonder whether, having coached with the Scarlets and now in your role, is there anything in that? Can you work out why Wales are so good at pulling together as one and delivering what they deliver?
Yeah, because the question I always get asked is, how did Warren do it? Now, how have you done it with on the back of your club's performances?
Yeah.
Because they haven't always been at the forefront. So, you know, I talk to the guys a lot around the jersey, the three feathers, and they're just so passionate about it. They've grown up as kids, very similar to what we did in New Zealand. You know, I used to get taken to Eden Park as a kid every week, you know. The old man would take you out of school, sneak you out of school, so you go to a Ranfurly Shield game in the middle of the week. So rugby was everything, you know, growing up. And obviously back in those days, you didn't have all the bloody phones and all the other bits and bobs to sort of use up your time. And the Welsh boys, it sounds like, you know, their upbringings and around rugby clubs and that sort of thing, very, very similar. And so you just live and breathe it, you know. It's what else do you want to do but play rugby? And then to be able to pull a jersey on and represent your country that's mad about it, it's something special, I guess.
Were you surprised about how talented the players were? I know you obviously had the exposure at Scarlets, but to see them all together, did it surprise you or did you expect it? Because when I was on the Lions tour with the Welsh, I was blown away by how good they were. And actually, even I thought, you know, the amazing success they had is they're so talented, I think they could have done even more. And it was kind of quite surprising to me, really. Not out of an arrogant point of view, just I'd never seen them up close. I'd never worked with them. And I thought they were incredibly talented.
Yeah, look, I think it's just understanding how you want to play the game, the skill sets that are required, and then making sure that we're working on that as a country. So what we're trying to do here is make sure that the basic skills that we're working on are continuing in with the clubs. So this week, I've been to two clubs already and we've got two more to go to, and it's just sharing just a few little work-ons that the boys have to have and making sure that, you know, constantly they're working on certain skills. And for us, you know, catch and pass under pressure is huge because we want to be able to move ball. We've got some exciting guys out wide and we need to get them into the game. And speed of ball is the key with the defences the way they are. If you know, you don't get speed of ball, it's very, very difficult.
I want to come on to you as a and in the police force in just a moment. And I know it's a squad effort. I do just want to ask you a couple of questions on particular individuals. Lewis Rees-Sammet, and you talked about picking a 19-year-old kid. The real deal, or just don't put any pressure on, give him time, or believe the hype?
So, believe the hype. He has had an amazing transformation from the Autumns to the Six Nations. He was unselectable in the Autumns. People were saying, or in the first Six Nations, sorry, we should have played him in the first Six Nations. But he couldn't repeat speed. He was so unfit. He couldn't play at this level of the game. He had some work-ons defensively and under the high ball. And the guy has just worked so hard. And I wasn't sure that he would. But he certainly has. And he's a terrific guy to have on your side to see the way he's worked. Yeah, and he was probably, who knows, what should we say? He was with a... He was at Gloucester with a bit of a superstar there for a while, and he's doing a bit of nightclubbing and that sort of thing. Probably now that those two aren't together anymore, I think he's working a lot harder, let's put it that way.
I don't know who you could be talking about, but it's good to know he's being coached in all the right areas of his life. And the other one is the old warhorse, Alan Wynn. I mean, he's totemic, and even on this side of the bridge, there is so much respect for him. But having worked with him, and I know you're talking about having cups of coffee and getting him on side, but for all that you've done in the game, is he up there with the very best standard drivers that you've worked with?
Yes, driving standards, without a doubt. And he leads by example. I just don't know where he gets the energy from. Every single training session, he comes out of the marquee on the side of the ground there at the Vale, and he's just like a bloody 12-year-old running around, you know? He seriously has a huge amount of energy. And I think he's just got a new lease of life. I have no doubt at all he can go to the World Cup. Absolutely no doubt from what I'm seeing. Unless he goes off a cliff. And I know, you know, it happens to everybody at some stage, yard of pace, what have you. But at the moment, he's showing no signs. I think the challenge for us and the challenge for his club is to make sure that he doesn't get overused. Having that 8 weeks off was probably a saviour for him. And to come straight in off the back of no club rugby and play the way he did, you can see that he's still got a lot of value for our side.
Were you surprised about how quickly he adapted to a new style of play? Because I remember seeing the stats, obviously, from the, I think it was the first Six Nations, obviously, most passes, most everything, and most offloads. And to see Alan Wynn-Jones, who is, like, you know, an incredible player, but to see him going through tackle, out the back door, offloading, and that, he's had that in his locker in the past, but not to the same thing. You know, they say old dog, new tricks. Are you surprised at how well he's adapted as well as setting the standards?
No, well, I was looking at how he was getting used before, and Al's, you know, he was, a lot of the ball was slow ball, and he's a big guy, and he's taking the ball, getting two defenders on him at the same time, and, you know, he's getting bashed around, and we thought, if we're going to get him through to a World Cup, and the way we want to play the game, and our sort of setup and attack from counter-attacks and that sort of thing, we can position the boys where we want them, and it's an economical style, and that we're not all going following the ball, and so we felt that with his skill set, we could put him in a wider channel and in certain parts of the game. So he really enjoyed that challenge, and he was really up for it. And at trainings, he's doing a lot of work on his offloading. And you saw, I think it was against Ireland in the first Six Nations over in Ireland. He got the ball away and we scored a try. So he's looking forward to more of that, I think.
Lions skipper?
Well, why not? Why not? That'd be Warren's call. Warren with the Welshman as a captain, probably be odds on. I'm not sure.
It's not an English bloke, is it?
Certainly isn't going to be you, Hask. We can all agree with that.
No. Well, I was thinking if I had Wayne coaching me, I might still be playing, because Alvin Jones is looking younger and I can't walk. I don't really know what the magic is. If there's something you're giving them or a little bit of magic, Wayne, send it down my way, mate.
I think there's an addition there for you, Hask, in terms of joining Nugget as the chief fun police.
No, I think Wales are going really quite well without getting Hask anywhere near.
We could derail this.
The inside out. Wayne, can I come on to you? And I reread just one of the best articles I've ever written by Graham Simmons, who was my mentor at Sky and just the most fabulous, fabulous journalist. And I know that you spent a bit of time with him back in the Scarlets days. I just want to reread you one of his quotes that you gave him. Oh, you can smell a crook. I've been off the force for years and I was still driving around Auckland thinking, hey, there's something going on over there. Even now I can walk into a bar or a club and scan the room in 5 seconds and tell you where the trouble's going to start. When you talk about smelling crooks, I know Hask is extremely pleased we're on a Zoom tonight because there's a definite odour around him. It's a brilliant quote, though. When you look back now at your career in the sort of police force, does it feel like yesterday? I ask this a lot. Does it feel like yesterday, or does the cop still live strong in you?
Well, dealing with rugby team is like, it's like the old job a lot of the time, to be honest. You know, especially on a Tuesday, the boys avoid me like the plague, you know, because generally you're going to name the squad on a Tuesday. No one wants to get that eye contact or that little come over and have a little conversation, you know.
Your collar felt.
Has talks about that all the time. Avoid the coaches. They can't drop you.
In the old job, I had a few years and quite often I'd be in jeans and a T-shirt and that sort of thing. And so it wasn't sort of, you know, just driving around in a marked police car in a uniform. So,
you were criminal investigation unit, is that right?
Yeah, so we would sometimes be in uniform, sometimes depending on what we were trying to solve, or it could be anything from a homicide to a robbery to a rape, whatever. And so there was a lot of serious crime, and so, you know, you had a little bit of latitude, to be quite honest, so you could have to think outside the box. And so, the boys, when they think they can get away with something, generally speaking, we've done it or been there or seen it, you know. So it does help from time to time. And you can have a bit of a laugh with it too, because there's some pretty funny stories over the years.
Remind me not to invite you to any of my team socials.
how much of those days do you bring forward to the coaching? Because you said you're basically a people person. It's all about managing relationship. Is that all built on what you used to do in the police force?
You know, you have to elicit information from people who don't want to give it to you. And there's a skill in that in terms of interviewing. Really, it's what I've found over the years, it's building trust with people. And rugby players are no different. You know, if I don't have a relationship with them, there's no trust there. Sometimes it's pretty hard to get on the same page. I just think that it's really helped me. And I know when I look at Shag, Steve Hansen, Mike Cron, guys like that, plenty of other guys that in the police in New Zealand that have gone on and done some pretty good things in rugby. I think it does definitely help, you know.
Was Hansen your assistant in the police?
Yeah, so I had a serious knee injury and stopped playing at about 27, 28. And so I got straight into coaching. And I was coaching the New Zealand police team. And Steve came on board as an assistant. And Mike Cron was the other selector. So it was the three of us. Okay.
It's gone all right since then. I thought he might have been your assistant, as in the two of you were in a car. I was suddenly seeing sort of like massive sideburns and flares and leaping over fences. But that wasn't the reality.
Steve wouldn't be leaping over too many fences,
would he? Going route one.
Would you be who was good cop, bad cop? That's what I was wondering. If you were using anyone's heads to open doors and stuff like that.
you know, we can't tell too many stories, can we?
not if you want to keep your job anymore. Yeah, but actually, yeah. Sure, you've won a Six Nations, so you can do what you want.
You're safe now. You're safe.
Window.
I can't imagine your bank manager's missing it, but do you miss those days? I mean, was it as exciting as it sort of sounds?
Yeah, look, it was a different era. I wouldn't do that job anymore, certainly. I think we got out when we did because the rules started to change. You know, there was cameras going everywhere. And, you know, back in the day, the law of the jungle, really. It was a different style of policing, but there were less people in prisons and more people behaved themselves.
Yeah.
I wondered, you said you can spot criminals. Can you spot... brown noses, because you mentioned Ken Owens, and Ken Owens is already earmarked himself on the board of the WRU. We call him Chairman Ken. You must have seen him coming a mile off. Was he bringing you apples, cups of tea?
Well, I made Ken captain, didn't I, the Scarlets, first week I got there. So, no, Ken's he's a fantastic bloke, the sheriff. He's just really upset because of COVID. He's done up a nice bar at his place. You'll have to get down there at some stage. It's apparently very good.
Blazers only, is it?
That's the problem. Chairman Ken's hoping.
Well, you know he's on the board at the Scarlets now.
That's what I mean. He's everywhere. If you go to a bar, it'll just be a lot of old men, way older than he is, standing there. You'll be like, Ken, where's your actual friends? He's like, no, these are all my friends, bud. Like, no, they're not. They're all people in positions of power. Give it a rest. I'm glad you spotted it, though. So you're obviously more sharp. You can spot the criminals and the brown noses. That's good to know. I'd be screwed then. I'm not sure what I am. I'm a bit of both.
Yeah.
The ropes told me a few stories, actually.
Well, you don't. You must know not to believe anything that comes out the ropes, man.
Oh, God. So I forgot the rope's still on the firm. Yeah, I should have spoken to you off air in case you said anything. Yeah.
He is still at an airport in Paris, still making his way home to his to his wife, and he's going to meet his
newborn
child for the second time, I think.
Yeah.
Wow, God, all the good stories.
Just wait. I'm really interested about that. You talk about the rope because obviously, you know,
this
you
is
like
Bobby
said,
Strigen. For those who haven't necessarily followed the story from the start.
Sorry. And he's head of S&C and stuff. And obviously, I know you've retained some surround yourself with those players. Was he someone that you heard about as kind of almost a folk hero to keep on board? Because he's fantastic at what he does as a job. He's an unbelievable motivator. And it seems like you've kept certain elements, which mean that, yes, it might be a new management, but there's still that kind of same vibe.
I've got a great relationship with a young second row I used to coach, Ali Williams, who obviously went to Toulon. And so I met Bobby through Ali a few years ago and figured out... when the team bus was held up for the Toulon boys, because Bobby and Ali were still with me in the bar, that he was probably a good chap. He liked the quiet one. And as you know, he's just such a great motivator of people. And he's a great guy to have around. He lifts the mood of the place. And you're not always up, are you? Sometimes it's you have some bad moments. And like through our autumn, he was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Top man.
So you were saying that obviously when the pressure's coming on, you know, it's sometimes hard to go to the well. Someone like Bobby just rolling in and making sure that training's going well, warm-ups are going well. He can change the whole dynamic and start keep the lads focused on what they're enjoying.
Yeah, and he has that ability to flick a switch, doesn't he? He's a very bright guy and he does a fantastic job. And he's loved by everyone, management and the players. And he's just such a character. And I think, you know, no matter what level of the game you're at, you've got to have those characters. It can't be robotic. It can't be a sterile environment. And he's certainly worth his weight in gold. And when I got the job, you know, he was one of the first people that we made sure was watertight in terms of the contract, because I felt that he'd get snapped up anywhere else as quick as anything if we didn't look after him.
Have you seen the rope?
Yes, I have.
Oh, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
more than once.
That's part and parcel. If you employ Bobby, you're definitely going to see it more than once. It's healed more injury. If I had it on a day-to-day basis, I wouldn't have a problem with my ankle, but I can't get access to him.
Charges too much now.
Just on someone like Bobby, and particularly because he's been with the squad for such a long time, do you challenge him to freshen the content, the tone, the way that he communicates, or does he kind of take that on himself? How important is it to keep the content fresh?
Oh, it's very important. Look, he understands how we want to play the game. So he knows what's required in terms of the levels of conditioning. He's very, very good at, obviously we've got GPS, we've got everything that opens and shuts, but Bobby will just watch a training session. I use my gut a lot, and we talk at the end of the session. It's just a quick look. He gives a nod. We're good. We're fine with that. Or he might just want another 5 minutes of conditioning games or something at the end of a training session. But he's very much bought into the fact that if we can do our trainings a certain way, we can be working on our skill sets at the same time as getting the conditioning. And so we've sort of mixed it up a bit, and he's just been spot on with everything he's done. He's the best in the business from the people I've dealt with. He's second in man.
The other equation I'd love to know is that for all the values, culture, sports science, etc., where do you find the balance between that and the power of a good beer? Because there's definite sort of old school in the, and I know from your success with the Scarlets, the players absolutely loved that run of success. I just wonder how you equate the two.
Oh, look, you've got to look at it and say, what's changed over the years? Why do people play rugby? And I believe it's the same. You know, it's a contact sport, so you actually like hitting people. You like being hit. It sounds a bit silly, but it's a barbaric sport at times, isn't it? And the size of the collisions now, so it takes a certain person to want to play the game for a start. And I always find that camaraderie, you know, it's not an individual sport like tennis or golf. Boys like to be with each other. They like each other, forming those relationships, those bonds that they have. And when you go and ask people to do things that if they did it in the street, they'd get arrested and go to court on the Monday, you've got to reward the hard work and success. And I'm a great believer in that you celebrate every success, but we don't celebrate losses. We'll have a couple of quiet beers together, glass of wine, whatever it is, in the team room. But we'll always have a drink together. And it's a somber moment if we've lost. But that's where the following result starts. You know, we don't go to bed and just sort of disperse. So I think it's really, really important, and it's something that we should never lose in the game.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to ask you is how essential it was those years with the Scarlets and the success that you enjoyed, and how much that prepared you for this job. I mean, would you slightly worry about taking the Wales job without having integrated yourself into Wales and loving it as you do in an environment like the Scarlets?
Yeah, I think it'd be really tough. I think for me personally, it's helped immensely. One, as I said earlier, you know, a lot of the players, when I walked into the camp for the first time, I'd coach. So they all talk to each other. So yeah, learning about the players, sort of what makes them tick, why they play the game, understanding the Welsh psychology and being able to relate to that as a New Zealander, because there are a lot of similarities, you know. So for me, coming in and seeing the tribalism in the clubs, seeing what goes on behind the scenes, off the field, there's a lot of probably infighting within Welsh rugby over a number of years, you know, over money and bits and pieces, and all the clubs obviously want to do well. So there's been a lot of rivalry there, and you know, I think there's been operating in silos quite a bit. So part of what I've been trying to do, and having worked on the other side of the fence, is to build those relationships with the clubs and try to make it one big happy family. But we've got a wee way to go on that. You know, at the moment we've won a Six Nations, but we're nowhere near where we need to be consistent week in and week out at the top level. And I think we know that. Mm. So it's a work in progress, definitely a work in progress.
Have you found, because one of the things we talked about last week's show about Eddie, and the Alex asked the exact question about why Wales have able to have some success with the limited, less numbers. And I said one of the things that I find, especially in the UK, is not joined up thinking behind the clubs, and that sometimes England would dictate or say, look, we'd like the players to do this stuff. They'd come to the clubs and the club S&Cs were going, you're not going to do this. The club coaches would say, you're not going to do this. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about in terms of, you know, trying to manage the players better, try to build those relationships, try to get some central themes of play across, try to make sure that when you leave the Wales squad, you know, with all due respect to the regions, there isn't a huge dip in kind of intensity, because the fact is that international level is different from the Premiership, is different to, you know, the Pro 14. Yeah, Pro 14.
You have to help Hask with the rugby itself.
Yeah, we, you know, that was one of the big learnings, was how we came out of COVID lockdown, how that impacted on the performances in the autumn. And then we looked at our numbers coming into camp in this campaign, and they were a lot better. You know, the clubs, we've sat down, Bobby's gone through with the other S&C boys, and I met with the coaches, and it's really making sure that we're all on the same page, as you say. And if we do that, it's going to help us immensely. It'd be nothing worse than having four different styles of play, you know, four different lots of standards, I guess, in terms of S&C. So sharing all that information can only help us. And hopefully, well, we've got pretty much new coaches now in all the clubs, so they're all pretty keen to do well. And so they've all been pretty receptive to conversations.
Do you look at someone like Eddie Jones, obviously managing England, or Galtier in France, and obviously see the battles that sometimes go on with the union? And would you see for either of them it benefiting it being the other way, or is it just something that they need to get on with? Because there is always questions about, should England go central contract, should France go centrally contracted? What's your opinions on it? Have you ever worked from the other way around?
Well, we know what goes on in Ireland, and you know, New Zealand years ago, there'd be no sharing of information at all. Everyone just kept themselves, and it was all about getting your own results, and it was dog eat dog, really. But a number of decades ago, and this is where we're in catch-up mode in Wales, they were doing stuff decades ago that we're trying to implement now. So we are trying to catch up, and sharing of information and working together sounds really, really simple, but you know, it doesn't always happen. So it will take time, but what we're trying to do is just pool our resources. One thing we do have, which is really, really helpful, is our geography. We're so close. I can be in a meeting in any of the clubs within 50 minutes, you know, so that is a big help. You can get guys together, little mini groups and that sort of thing. So the geography helps us. Centralised contracts, I mean, that's something that's been discussed here. At the moment, it's probably the area that we need to really sort out going forward. But obviously, this pandemic has thrown everything into chaos financially for the clubs, so and for the union. So it's going to be interesting to see how we sort of come out of it in the next 12 to 24 months.
Is there anything that, since you took over, obviously with the experience of the Scarlets, that you just did not expect to be involved? Like some, I don't know, it's an odd tradition or something weird that you were like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening.
Because I think the Scarlets boys probably bring some of that back from the international camp. So singing of songs, that sort of thing, little traditions when you come into the team for the first time, you know, those things are important, and they certainly love that side of it. Unfortunately for me, I can't sing like the bloody Welsh boys can. Most of them are fantastic singers, you know. Yeah, those sorts of traditions and that probably go from one to the other.
Did you have to go at the front of the bus and sing?
No.
Who bottled that? Ken again. You know, that's why you've named all those players. We'd have forced everyone. I don't think Eddie's actually sung, probably because maybe their coach is exempt.
Who would sing for your life in that Welsh squad? If someone needed to nail an audition, you to survive, who would you put your money on in that Welsh squad?
Oh, it's a tough one because generally they all jump in, and so they're all singing together, you know.
You just get a band.
Yeah, well, no, a lot of them are pretty good, you know. I'm just trying to think. The most confident person, and he wouldn't be the best singer, but he'd tell you that he is Rob Evans.
Yes.
So he doesn't lack in confidence, and he'd give anything a go.
Right. Can you mime Sospen Vach or Oes Scavaretto or not?
Lip syncing is what you've got to do, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Just mumble and look confident.
At the moment, though, we've got these masks on, so...
Very good. Just hum.
So in 2 years when it's all disappeared and you've still got your mask on, people are going, he's really nervous about COVID coming back.
Your autobiography, when the time comes, is going to be an extraordinary read, you know, from, as we mentioned, the Crime Investigation Unit through to Six Nations titles. I'd love to just very quickly get the headlines for you from coaching the police, coaching Auckland and coaching Fiji as well. I mean, it's been an amazing journey. Were there bits along that journey that will live with you forever?
Well, yeah, they're all different, but they sort of all help you along the way. And coaching Fiji was... Wow, it was frustrating at times, but it was so challenging. You've probably all played with one or two Fijian boys, but when you've got a tour party of 36 players and Fijian management and your band Carver, it really does test them, you know. I'll give you a little example of what the discipline was like there. So we banned the Carver, and we had a board member turn up with something like 15 kilos of the stuff. And how he got it there, I don't know. But this was on our tour. We played Wales, I think Portugal and Italy in about 2005, I think it was. That was really interesting times coaching Fiji, because I don't think there was a player in the squad that I didn't have to deal with for some off-field incident during my time there. It was really, really interesting. But what great guys, you know, and
You know, did you have Rupeni at one? Did you have Rupeni at one stage?
Yeah, yeah. Well, what a probably.
Did anyone ever have Rupeni?
Yeah.
Honestly, when he first started and came on the scene before the fame and all the money and all the alcohol and whatever else he enjoyed doing, he came onto the scene playing for Northland in New Zealand, and the Blues signed him up. And there was a preseason game where Wendell Saylor had just transferred from rugby league to rugby. So everybody came over to North Harbour Stadium. It was a preseason game, the Reds against the Blues. And they all came to see Wendell Saylor. And he was marking this little Fijian boy from Northland called Rupeni Thauthau. Rupeni scored 4 tries that day. And he made, I'm just trying to think who the Aussie fullback was at the time, but they had a lot of...
Latham. Would it have been Latham?
Yeah, it was actually. And he made those boys, look pretty ordinary. He was quick. He could go around you, go inside you. He had everything. Yeah, it was just a shame. If he was in any other country, eligible for any other country, he'd be a global superstar. Yeah. He would probably have been the best player on the planet in his day.
Wow. Did you ever, with the off-field incidents, do you ever forget yourself and go back to the old days, start getting the yellow pages out and stuff like tying them to accounts? Yeah.
It's probably what's helped me with a lot of the interviews, actually. let's just say a few of the boys overstepped the mark from time to time. We've been able to help them out.
just protecting and serving.
I'm talking about amateur club days, obviously, in New Zealand now.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Yeah.
But, Dorian West used to always tell some great stories about things he used to do as a copper when people overstepped the market without having to take them and give them the full lecture down the station. There was things they could do just to let them know very quickly.
Yeah.
Just a knowing nod, but nothing said.
Yeah.
Listen, Wayne, this has been really, A, very good of you to join us, and B, absolutely brilliant. I'm conscious of your time. What's on the to-do list now? Hopefully, a bit more celebration, but what else is there to get done in the next few days, weeks, months?
We've got coaches' reviews to get through to see if we hold our jobs. We've got clauses in the contract sort of midway through to a World Cup, and so we'll be dealing with that probably this week. I think we've got some meetings tomorrow. Yeah, there's some player contracts to get tidied up. We've got a fantastic person in Julie Patterson who's done 30 years at the Union. She's head of rugby operations, so we're just trying to tidy up a lot of loose ends before she goes. And we've got a rugby high performance manager to put in place. So those are the sorts of things between now and summer tour.
Great. Neither of you two are putting your CVs in for that, by the way. We're going to keep those well and truly out of the intro. Congratulations. Many, many, many congratulations. It's been a brilliant story. We love stories that sort of a comeback variety. And from October, November to where you are now, it's brilliant to see. So thank you again for joining us. We wish you all the very best. Look after yourself, your team, and we shall follow with great interest. Hopefully we'll see a number of your team in action this summer in South Africa. I know you'd love to see that as well. Thank you, Wayne. Look after yourself. All the very best.
Thanks for having me on the show, and no doubt you'll edit out some of that stuff.
We'll look after you. We're not brave enough not to. I can tell you that for free.
Okay, boys.
Good on you. Thanks so much. Little debrief on that.
I mean, I'm okay. So I had no concept of what he was going to be like, but it wasn't like that. What I think would be an unbelievable coach. I think what a lovely guy, and I think I'd love to work with him. Do you know why? Because I think he embodies everything that I think is right in how you want to be coached. And obviously, I've never, we came on the show, and I remember, I eat my words. I remember we were talking about under that pressure. And the one thing I said, I don't know Wayne. I said, I don't know what's happening in the Welsh squad. I said, the only thing you could look at is that there wasn't the international experience. Like, I felt maybe the experience would have to follow someone like Warren Gatton. Everything that I would say has completely changed my perspective. And I thought I was brilliant, really interesting. And also, with all due respect to Kiwis, you don't often get overly gregarious Kiwis, and he was brilliant. I thought what he said was fantastic and really interesting.
I literally, after 10 minutes of listening to him, was like, I'd love to have played for him. He reminded, he just, one thing that Hask would have picked up on is relationships with players in terms of, having those tough conversations, which a lot of coaches seem to forget about. They don't give you reasons why you're dropped, or, the talk that he had with Byron Haywood. I just think he's upfront, honest, and over communication is something that you always want out of a coach. Even if you're just picking up the phone, so you constantly know where you are, then you can adapt and change things and
constantly on the go. So yeah, he was very impressive, to be fair. Actually, again, like Haas, didn't know how he was going to be, but someone I saw. It's funny that how you think you meet someone and you would definitely want to play underneath them, because you could see yourself going in the same direction very easily.
I thought what I found interesting as well is that, having read some management books and different stuff, I talked about Stuart Lancaster and the book that he used to, you know, The School Takes Care of Itself, and all these kind of different approaches. A lot of people come in and clean the whole canvas, and then they start again. Immediately you can tell he's intelligent, understands the social dynamics. You know, keeping those Welsh legends on board, you know, almost as a ring fence round, I think is really clever. All three of those guys are legends of Wales. All three of them are top lads. Like, you're not going to find anyone from any country saying that those lads aren't, you know. Stephen Jones, one of the best coaches and players I work with, what an absolute hero. Nugget, what a boy. But then also to see someone like Bobby on board, I'm actually quite jealous. That's the kind of environment that I want to get involved with. Sorry, my dog keeps letting himself into the room. It's something that you want to play, and I think he's very astute and very smart, and I really enjoy it. And I think he's kind of he's got it nailed, and hopefully they can lead to some success. Because what I meant on that Lions tour was, I was so surprised when I saw the players how good they were, because obviously we'd had the battles, but to watch how athletically good they were, how skillfully good they were, I think if we can harness that with a new style of play, because, you know, Warren and Sean were amazing, but, you know, you need to always evolve. And I think what they're trying to do with some evolution is good. And if they get the rub of the green and they can keep developing, he gets a chance to put his ideas in place, then I'm excited to see it.
It's funny how he obviously talked about what New Zealand were and how Wales are sort of 20 years behind it, and how they just share information. So everyone sort of plays the same way. And that's why is that why New Zealand stay on top? Because they're just, everyone's come through the same environment, playing the same way. So you're just pushing on the edges of, or the boundaries of what you've been doing for 20 years. It's an interesting thing comparing that to someone like England and France, who each team only cares about their team. They don't really necessarily care about the national team, so it's not done for the greater good of every team playing the same sort of way, so that anyone who steps into that international is in a comfortable level. It's an interesting food for thought.
I was just going to pick up on the thing you were both saying about how much you'd love to play for him, because I did the pro, I think it was a pro 12 when they won it in 2017, I think it was, and they played the most extraordinary rugby. So if Wales are on a journey now and it's just beginning, I think there's a lot more to come from them as he begins to get his blueprint underway. But also, they just had so much fun. It looked like the most extraordinarily good time to be a part of that Scarlets outfit. And you had some really sort of, you know, not straight down the line characters, but guys like Ken, who love a blazer badge and a tie combination pack. And then people like Rob Evans, Cubby, Jonathan Davis's brother as well, James Davis. I mean, completely the other end of the spectrum. And all of them it just looked an absolute riot. And it's really, there's something very romantic about when a riot turns successful, if you know what I mean. And I'm really pleased for him that he's come through and has quite obviously enjoyed and celebrated a Six Nations title. Good on him.
I think it was, you know, pretty interesting as well to hear. I know, you know, you're never going to talk up the pressure, but I can imagine from what I've seen, when we stayed up in Wales and played the game, you see the media and exposure, you know, the intensity, you know, for him to survive that and come out the other side of it and actually turn out for him to be a good lad and to create the environment. I like that even more, because I wonder how close. And I know he said he got the relationship and they signed the contracts and the board knew about it. But boards are all well and good. This is what Michael Checker said when I interviewed him, that when 2015, he felt he had the support of the board. He had a good relationship. He could tell people how it was. And later on in 2019, he lost the support of the board. They put other people in place. The board are only as good as what the pressure and media allow them to be before they start folding and suddenly don't stop answering your calls. I wonder how close it got, where there was any pressure, or was it as relaxed as he says it was? Because he doesn't seem like a man that gets phased, which is interesting, because from the outside, I thought he was going to be absolutely phased to an inch of his life, you know?
Yeah. But I suppose when you've worked homicide in Auckland, a couple of losses in an Autumn Nations Cup where no one's in the stadium doesn't necessarily work. Our social team need to get on and mock up Hanson and Pivac. I mean, it's Hanson and Pivac. It sounds like a 1970s show, doesn't it? In some sort of, what are they driving? They're going to be driving
Ford Capri.
Ford Capri, do you think?
Ford Capri, leather jacket.
What was that? What was the car that you and Dylan had in?
The V-Bang, a Vauxhall Victor.
Yeah, like that would work.
I want a Mustang. I want something. There needs to be a little bit of attitude there. But then I want them rolling across the bonnet. I want big sideburns.
There's no Mustangs in New Zealand.
No, that's what
you've
I mean.
You've got to reflect what's
a larder. Okay, so basically, a Hanson and Peabach in a larder, a bad cop and bad a cop, they're just rolling around, Peabach with a little roll up on the side of his corner.
There's going to be such a good mock-up. There's going to be such a good mock-up photo coming.
Oh, yeah, Team Social get to work.
And Hanson's always by the chip stall with a chip before the criminal runs past. And he's like, Steve, you're not going to get that? He's like, fucking, we'll get him next time. And you're like, Wayne, that's what it'd be like, the comedy sketch. Oh, look what you've gone and done. Wayne, you made me feel my chip.
They'd have a massive suitcase of tools on the back seat. You know, there'd be chainsaws and all sorts. We need to get the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, Christ. Someone needs to write a script. This needs to happen. Well done, Wayne Peabach. Well done, Wales. And to all those who've said we've been way too English recently, hopefully that settles the score. We just love good stories. I think that's what we're just trying to find. Always trying to find a good story. That certainly was one of those. That is it for GBNR this week. Thank you to Mike. Thank you, James. Thank you, of course, to Wayne Peabach for dropping in. Don't forget our sister show, The Good, the Scars and the Rugby, with Emily Scarrett and Elmer Schmidt. Last week, we had the BBC commentator Sarah Orchard. This week, previewing the Women's Six Nations, which kicks off this weekend. Good luck to the Red Roses. We'll be watching with great interest. Good luck to Scars in that as well. You can get that this week's show from wherever it is you do your YouTubing and your podcasting. Tins and I are back on Friday with our Premiership preview show. How did we get on this week?
Done by Bath.
Yeah.
I'd have had a full house without Bath.
And well done, Gloucester, actually.
Yeah.
You changed horses mid-race.
Well, I changed horses when I looked at the bookies. It proves that the bookies know what they're talking about.
No surprise. Hopefully we will get better and better. Not hard to. We've got a very special guest for you next week. It really will be the one club kicking legend, club captain, country captain, and all-round inspiration that we trailed last week but have popped to next week for obvious reasons. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. See you in 7 days' time. Hit it, Rob Brydon. Look after yourselves. Be kind. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.